Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are in the world, and welcome to today's episode of Interop Radio. Interop Radio for February 3rd, 2015. I'm your host, Kurt Franklin, and I'll let you know that you may have something a little different. So I want to let you know the kind of day we have here at Interop Radio. The hour at the Swamp Studio went out a little more than 10 minutes ago, and so we threw the mini studio into the official Information Week and Interop pickup truck and drove it to our favorite coffee shop. And so I'm now sitting at a picnic table outside my favorite coffee shop hosting this episode. Now, if you hear some traffic noise or the occasional bird, please know it's not that I'm trying something different with background music. It's simply what's going on around me. Speaking of things going on, we do want to remind you that this and every episode of Interop Radio is brought to you by Interop Las Vegas, connecting the IT community. Interop will be happening April 27th through May 1st, 2015 at the beautiful Mandalay Bay Convention Center in Las Vegas. For more information and to register, go to www.interop.com. Now, today we're going to be talking about one of those topics that everyone loves to talk about, but so few people actually accomplish anything within. And that's being innovative. And we have a great guest for this, one of the truly innovative CIOs that I know. We have Jonathan Felton, who is CIO for the city of Asheville, North Carolina. Jonathan, welcome to Interop Radio.
Kurt, thanks so much. I really appreciate it. And I think we probably had somebody downloading an illegal version of a movie or something at your coffee shop, because some of what you said was a little bit cut off, so I just want to let everyone know who's listening that Kurt had power issues at the Swamp Studio, and he had to throw stuff in the pickup truck. That part I think you heard, and he's now at a coffee shop under conditions of extreme adversity. So I tip my hat in your direction.
Well, fortunately, we have Jonathan. You're good enough to make up for any deficiencies on my part. And I wanted to start with a question that may seem obvious, but I think it doesn't get asked often enough. We talk a lot about innovation in the IT world, and I hear a lot of CIOs and other executives talking about innovation. Why do you think innovation is held up as this magical thing in most organizations? What is special about innovation?
Well, you know, I sent something out to my newsletter subscribers this morning, right? Because this is a word that drives me crazy, right? Innovation. What does it mean? You know, it's a buzzword. I mean, look, I'm as guilty as anybody using the word innovation. And what I said in the email I sent out this morning is I'm trying to get myself to talk about creating positive change instead, right? Because when you phrase it as innovation, it's sort of this magical pixie dust that, oh, you know, well, we can fix that. All we have to do is add innovation. And, you know, there was a wonderful Information Week column, which was a great rant on innovation. You know, innovation is executive porn, and I'll let y'all look that one up on your own. It is safe for work, despite that title. And I think to answer your question, Kurt, it's because there's so very much wrong at everybody's workplace. You know, I don't care if you're working, you know, in private sector or public sector. I don't care if you're working for a privately held or publicly held company. There are problems, right? And the way we fix those problems is through creativity and by making things better. And, you know, the buzzword is innovation, right? So who wouldn't want to make things better? But I just think that that innovation buzzword is, you know, is both very heady for those who like buzzwords, but also it's a big turnoff for people who don't like buzzwords.
Well, it seems like one of the two great paths that I hear about people being on, one, of course, is innovation and creativity, and the other is this notion of very process-oriented, stepwise, constant improvement.
Yeah.
Do you see any tension between those two approaches, or is it all really just different wrapping for the same package?
I think that's a great question, and it's a great question because often folks do think, you know, if I'm not a disruptor, then I'm not being innovative. And, of course, that's not true, right? There's continuous improvement efforts that just really help your organization thrive. But then there is disruption. And my short answer to that, Kurt, is that I think you need both. You know, sometimes you can't see out of the jar that you're in, and you need to do something that you know brings you out of your own self. You know, and I think in a lot of cases you've got to look outside the organization. You've got to do you know some real thinking outside of what your organization thinks is normal. And that's where you sort of get into the disruption world and less into the continuous improvement world. But I think you have to have both, at least in my opinion.
Well, now, I want to draw things down to your experience a little bit because
sure.
You work in an environment that many people would see as being one of the more risk-averse environments that's out there, and that is the realm of government. From where you sit, is being disruptive something that is welcomed by the organization, something that is tolerated by the organization, or something that the organization tends to fight tooth and nail?
So I've had the benefit of working for large organizations, mid-sized organizations, government, private sector, publicly held, privately held. You know, mostly because I can't keep a job, right? But it is my contention, Kurt, that there is resistance all over the map when it comes to change. You know, it's one of the few, four-letter words that has more than four letters to it, right? I think it's not that people don't like change. It's that people often don't see the benefit of change. It's often that people are very afraid of what the future holds. And to bring it back to my experience in government, and I could tell you, you know, private sector stories as well, but, you know, government all about process. And government is all about institution and going on for a long time, right? When we talk about, for example, our wide area network, we talk about it in the decades, you know, time frame. We don't talk about it in, you know, well, in the next 5 years, you know, because City Hall is going to be City Hall, right? It's been City Hall for more than a couple of decades, right? It's probably, it's been City Hall, I think, since 1918. And so we have a much longer time frame, and I think, you know, rightly or wrongly, folks view government as this ponderous, slow-moving beast. I think in defense of government, often you want to make the right decision for the long term, and so sometimes that takes a little bit longer. But I just don't think that government is any less open to change than any large institution. The question is, right, this is my challenge to everybody. Think of change as being a lock and a key, right? And I talk to help desk about this all the time. You know, we're sending out a notice of a change. You know, what's in it for me, right? What's in it for the person reading that help desk notification? Well, you know, we're doing maintenance. You know, IT person says, well, of course we have to do maintenance. Yeah, but why are we doing maintenance? We're doing it to keep you safer from a security standpoint. We're making things more reliable for you, all that kind of stuff. So one example of a change that sometimes freaks out institutions was our BYOD policy. And we didn't even call it BYOD because it was before that term was in popular use in the press. And I think a lot of folks were freaked out by it internally to IT, but we were very fact-based about it. And, you know, the key here was to show what's the benefit to IT, what's the benefit to the organization. I think it really helped that we shopped it with a lot of folks who were important decision makers in the organization. And we also took a very hard look at who can do this, right, and who shouldn't do this. And so the notion of, you know, the high security type of person came up, and the notion of someone who only deals with open records, right, and it's all public information, also came up. And if everything's public information and you're not giving away the keys to the kingdom, why wouldn't you allow someone to attach their own device to the network, given that there is an expectation of responsibility and accountability, as well as the privilege being given? And so to me, those three pillars are what are the key that unlocked BYOD at our institution. That's different for every institution, right? But I think change can be made. It's just a question of how do you approach that change.
Well, now, I'm going to assume that when you were setting up those policies and making the changes, that was within a management feeling. I hardly know what to call it. I hate to use the overworked term culture, but mm-hmm. I assume it's within a culture that you had established there within the organization. And one of the things I'm curious about, when you first took the job, mm-hmm. for making the changes and for being innovative, did you find it best to walk in on day one and say, hi, I'm Jonathan, everything you know is wrong? Or did you have to approach it a little bit differently as you were coming into the organization?
No, I think it's very tempting to go into a new job and say, you know, y'all are in crisis, everything you know is wrong. But I think that's the wrong way to go about it. I think you got to understand that in your first 100 days, you are indelibly making a first impression. And so if you do nothing during your first 100 days, people are going to expect you to do nothing. And, you know, the resiliency, and I forget who told me this, but, you know, it's sort of like cement. You know, you have a certain amount of time to work with it, after which you can no longer work with it. So I think it's important to do something in your first 100 days. But on the other hand, I think just willy-nilly picking every battle in your first 100 days is a terrible idea. In the case of City of Asheville, I came into an organization. I've been at the City of Asheville for it's not quite a decade, but as of Valentine's Day, it will be a decade. So about 10 years ago, there was no help desk. They did measure customer service scores, and IT was on the bottom of the pile. And there were two things that let me rewind a little bit. Before I came on the job, I actually did a site visit to the city. I met with city manager. I met with a bunch of department heads. And I said, look, you know, what's your beef with IT? You know, what exactly could we be doing better, right? And as I started listening, I didn't come to any conclusions yet. And then in my first week or so at the job, you know, I had one CIO who was mentoring me say to me, you need to ask everybody for their resume first week you're there and tell them to apply for their jobs again. I mean, this guy's a great CIO, but I didn't think that was a good idea. You know, what I did instead was I did sit down with everybody and take a skills inventory, and I said, you know, what are you good at? What gives you energy? What makes you want to come to work in the morning? You know, just very simple human type of questions, right? We need you to have skills. I need to know what you like to work on. I need to start figuring out what the pieces of the staffing puzzle are. And finally, you know, what's making you miserable here? And I think those exercises gave me the information that I needed. And within the first couple weeks, I had enough information to start taking some action. And so, you know, the first two actions, you know, and I've slept since then, but as far as I recall, the first two actions that we took were, number one, instituted a customer service survey on a quarterly basis. I have three actions. Number two, I remember this was in the first couple weeks. I said, this is our first quarterly report. We're going to report on what's happening, what our accomplishments were, what our goals are, every single quarter. And, Kurt, I have done that every quarter for, you know, going on 10 years now. And then the third thing was, it was just so obvious that there was no triage process whatsoever going on. And so before we even installed software or help desk software, we instituted a help desk process, which that is no small thing. But, you know, between those three things, I think that set the tone, right, for the rest of the decade, really, because we are all about the customer. And I think that when you're talking about innovation, the buzzword, you're doing it in a very narcissistic way. When you're talking about innovation, the ability to make things better, you're doing it in a very customer-focused, you know, I won't say selfless because it's making things better for you too, but it's in a very customer-focused and purposeful way.
Okay, now you said something in that last answer that I want to dig a little bit deeper on.
Sure.
Before we do, though, I want to remind everyone that this is Interop Radio, brought to you by Interop Las Vegas, connecting the IT community. Interop Las Vegas will be live in person from April 27th through May 1st, 2015, at the beautiful Mandalay Bay Convention Center in scenic Las Vegas, Nevada. For more information and to register, please go to www.interop.com. Now, Jonathan, one of the things that a word that you mentioned several times in your last answer was customer. And like most organizations, the government there in Asheville has, I would say, two sets of people that you could consider your customer. One is the internal customer, all of the other government employees, and then
right,
there are the citizens of Asheville that might interact with government or its services through the IT infrastructure. Do you find that there's any difficulty in balancing the needs of those two sets of customers, or do you find that you have to treat them differently at all?
Well, Kurt, I find that if there is a disagreement between city staff and serving the citizen population or the public purpose, which is very different from serving an individual citizen, right? But if there's a disagreement between, you know, public good and a city employee, that city employee is usually at fault, right? Because we're here to serve the public purpose, right? We're here to provide safe parks. We're here to keep the city safe, you know, from crime. We're here to respond to fires, pick up trash, provide water, all that stuff. And so in aggregate, the needs of city employees and citizens are actually very much aligned. You know, Jen Palka of Code for America is one of my favorite people, and she's a founder of Code for America, which is this Peace Corps for geeks, where folks can, you know, sign up and give a year of service to helping municipalities through technology. That's codeforamerica.org. But one of the things she said in her TED talk was, there is no them and there is no us. It's we the people. And I say right on, Jen Palka, because I live here too. I want that same clean water. I want that same fire and police service and everything else. And so, you know, why would I, if I understood things in a very clear way, why would I fight against that public purpose? There really is no them and us. Now, I think occasionally, as individuals, you have individual employees, city employees, who are maybe not as aligned with that public purpose. And I think as managers and as executives with a city government, you know, that's when you take realignment steps and, you know, you over-communicate and all that kind of stuff. But I just don't think that serving those two groups is as diametrically opposed as one would think, because, you know, I just don't think that anybody who's doing a job for an organization is going to say, I want a bad outcome. I mean, unless, you know, there's somebody who doesn't need to be working for the organization, and then there are other ways of handling that. So I hope that helps.
Well, I've got to say, Jonathan, it sounds like you've been very successful at creating an organization within IT that is receptive to change and willing to be innovative. So I'm guessing that you now are able to simply sit back, rest on your laurels, and let the organization run pretty much as it will. Or am I missing something? Are there still things that you feel like you need to work on there within your own organization?
Every day, Kurt. Every day. You know, I mean, yeah, it would be great if honestly, I would be bored, right? I mean, if you ask anybody who knows me, I'm a little bit hyperactive. Oh, look, a squirrel, you know?
Yeah.
You know, every day there are challenges. Every day there's another civic issue that demands our attention. I'll give you an example. Graffiti was a hot topic in 2014. And because of a lot of investment that we made, so here was the ask, right? Our city council said, you know, graffiti, it's a hot topic. We really want citizens to see what's going on. We want them to see it a week from now, at, you know, or 2 weeks from now at the campaign launch. We need a hotline. We need a new website. We need, you know, a visualization of where all the graffiti is and all that kind of stuff. And I love this story because from the outside, it seems like we just pressed the easy button and this website materialized and, you know, there's a hero inside of IT and it was this one guy and et cetera and so forth. But if you kind of go under the waterline, it's actually that overnight success was actually 10 years in the making. And you can see that the website is 123 the digits, 123graffitifree.com. And, you know, it's good data, right? It's valid data of where the graffiti is in the city, and it's people working hard and public works and updating their work orders, and it's the result of investments that we made about 3 years ago into learning about lean startup and the concept of minimum viable product, and it's investments that we made into our hiring methodology, right? Because you've probably heard me say this before, IT is a people business before it is a technology business. And in fact, you know, one of our new hires actually, you know, hit the ground running and cranked this thing out, and he's awesome. But we also had a supporting cast of folks who were doing everything that I was just talking about, including, you know, data validation, and good GIS, which is geographic information systems. You know, and then there was, you know, the voice over IP system where we easily added another line, and it all looks so easy, right, above the surface of the water, but underneath the surface, you know, there's this gigantic iceberg that we've been crafting for, you know, a better part of a decade.
So. Well, it does sound like you have been at work for a good decade. I'm glad we caught you here just before that 10th anniversary with the city of Asheville. We're coming down to the end of our time, but wanted to ask one more quick question, and that's, you mentioned that when you first went into the position there in Asheville, you gave the IT employees a survey, and you asked them just human questions, including what excites you about IT? What excites you about what you're doing? If you were taking that survey, what excites you about the world of IT these days?
You know, I do love how dynamic it is, Kurt. You know, I joke with my staff about go to lunch, fall behind, you know, but I kind of like it too. I like how it changes. I love making things better. The things that give me energy are working with smart people on difficult problems and conquering them. And that's, for me, that's what IT is all about. And technology is great, and it's a great vehicle to get there. But what it really boils down to is, are we solving a civic problem or a business problem? Are we, you know, creating opportunity for folks? That's what gives me energy, Kurt, ultimately.
Well, Jonathan, you have done a good job of giving us energy here at Interop Radio. We very much appreciate you being our guest today. Now, I know that a lot of people would like to keep up with your thoughts, and tell us, how can we do that? How can we follow you, keep up with your thinking on various news? How do we find you in the vast world that is the Internet?
I mean, first I should point out that I will be at Interop. I think I'm going to be talking about leadership in a millennial world, meaning the millennial generation, and that should be fun, IT leadership in that context. I may be talking about some security things at Interop, and you probably know the dates for that better than I do. I think it's April 27th through May 1st of this year. And secondly, the best way to keep track of me on the internet is to go to feldman.org, F as in Frank, E-L-D-M-A-N.org, and sign up for my newsletter. And I normally, you know, I send out a micro essay every week, and all of my information stuff, Information Week stuff is also there, pointed to anyway.
Well, outstanding. Well, I hope that while we are all together at Interop, that you'll be, I guess, on one of our shows out there. We're going to be doing a lot of radio from the Mandalay Bay Convention Center, and we'd love to have you as a guest out there.
Awesome. Looking forward to it, Kirk.
We would also love to have all of you join us at Interop 2015. As a reminder, Interop Las Vegas, connecting the IT community, will indeed be going on from April 27th through May 1st, 2015, at the Mandalay Bay Convention Center in Las Vegas. Now, if you enjoy the kind of information that we've had on today's radio programs, all of our Interop radio programs, you will absolutely love being part of the community at Interop Las Vegas. To get more information and to register, please go to www.interop.com. Now, next week, we are going to be talking about one of those issues that faces every manager and everyone in IT, and that's making presentations. We're going to have Betsy Weber with us. Betsy is the evangelist for TechSmith, and she is going to be talking with us about how to do IT presentations that don't put your audience into either a homicidal rage or a comatose state. I think you're all going to want to be here for Betsy's show. Lots more coming up after that. We go back into a tech direction because we're going to start a series where we have some of the people who are part of the crew for the InteropNet and the SDN Lab who will be our guests in the weeks leading up to Interop. Well, for Jonathan Feldman and all here at Interop Radio, I'm Kurt Franklin saying thanks so much for listening. Hey, we'll see you next time.